I need to continue this mic just to see if we're working right today. So tell me if I sound like I'm in a tin box or not. There we go. We're on. All right, we're going to continue in Matthew 13. Like I said, we're going to discuss the rest of the parables in this chapter. And some of them are pretty short, so this may not look at these and apply them to ourselves. And at the same time, we're going to remember that these are lessons that are based on earthly things so that we can learn spiritual truths from them. All right, let's dig in anyways. The parable of the tares is the next one we're going to be doing, and it's kind of like the one with this parable of the sower. Jesus actually explains it himself, so it's pretty simple to understand here, that whereas we wouldn't understand the other ones as easily. All right, let's go ahead and read. We're going to read 24 through 30. I'm just going to go ahead and read the whole thing instead of picking it apart one by one. 24 through 30. It says, "Another parable put he forth them, saying, The kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which soweth good seed in the field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat, and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the household came and said unto him, Sir, didst thou not sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? He said unto them, An enemy has done this. The servant said unto him, Will thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. Lest both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather ye together the first of the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat unto my barn." Okay. Again, like I said, Christ compares all this and makes it easier for us to understand. So let's take a look at it. Verse 37 is where we're going to be at. It says, "He answered and said unto them, He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man." So very clearly here, Christ himself is saying that the one that is giving the good seed is himself. Nobody else. Pretty simple there. Strangely enough, the next part that's explained, when I was studying and such, it was amazing that people would think that the field, which is referred to here, applies to just the church. I don't see how they could see that, because Christ obviously very easily explains what the field is, but that was one of the improper thinking. So be careful what we think of what these mean. Let's take it for what it says. Let's go to verse 38, and it explains it. It says, "The field is the world." The entire world, not just the church. Christ's field is everywhere. Continue on here. It reads, "The good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one." So we have the wheat that's being tossed out, the good seed. Those are the ones that have obeyed the plan of salvation. Those are the good ones. Those are the ones that are in the kingdom. Whereas we have the tares here. And those are the tares of the wicked one, as it says here in the King James. That's the ones that the devil spreads out. We'll read in verse 38. We'll see that in 39. It tells us who the wicked one is referring to. But the good seeds are spread by Jesus. And they're the people that obey the gospel. The bad seeds come from the devil, and they're the ones that just want to ignore it or not follow it completely. Pretty simple here. Going on in verse 39, it says, "The enemy that soweth them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the world, and the reapers are the angels." Interesting enough that we can see this and know that this is pretty easy to follow. You come in, you want to harvest your crop. Who's coming? Well, reapers normally come. People that, you know, go out by hand and pick it all. But he's making a comparison here to the angels. The angels are the ones coming and taking and separating the good from the bad. And it's pretty simple to see this. But what we see here is in the comparison, when we have the harvesters, they were gathering up the wheat and the tares. They were told to take the tares and they were told to throw them off to the side. Or how did that word it? "Let them both grow together until harvest, and in time of harvest I will say to the reapers," this is verse 30 by the way, "gather you together first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them. That's exactly what's going to happen to those people that are of the seed of the devil, of the wicked one. They will be thrown into the fire, while the rest of us get to go to heaven. It's a frightening thought to think we have two plants here growing together. And if you notice, they're growing up together, like literally right on top of one another. We can apply that to the church. I was talking to Holly a little bit this weekend about that. And you see that in the church, there are members that grow up just like the rest of us. They look like us. They participate. But in the end, they may end up actually being tares or the weeds. It's quite interesting that they're allowed. But what happens, we've seen in this verse, where was it? Verse 28 and 29. It says, but he said, nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. You can think what happens if you start pulling out people here just saying, oh, you're a weed, you're a tare, you're weed, oh, you're wheat. We start pulling people out. What happens is usually other people follow them, even if they are faithful. But it just goes to show, Hebrews 10:25, we talk about that quite a bit, about not forsaking the assembling of as others do. We can see the importance here that even those that are sitting here right now, there could be tares among us. Just because we're here doesn't mean that's enough. This is something we have to do all throughout our life. That's what separates us from the wheat and the weeds. And there's plenty of room for us to grow. Let's go back to verse 25. We see here, while the men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. Now the reference here to the enemy is Satan, while men are sleeping. We can reference this to ourselves. If we're not studying, if we're not learning as much as we can in the Word, we're sleeping. If we're not getting involved in different activities, if we're not just immersing ourselves, that's when the devil sneaks in. And we always have to be careful. I know we refer to him. We refer to the devil sometimes as the roaring lion. We see that. What is the devil? Let's take it this way. If we look at a lion, what is the animal, if you ever watch those shows, you see the safari things, what does the lion go after? Does he go after the strongest gazelle in the group? Does he go after the fastest one? No, he goes after the weak one. The one that doesn't is sickly. That's why devil's portrayed as a lion, because he's going after those that are weak. We cannot be that weak gazelle or that zebra or whatever the lion wants to eat. We have to reinforce ourselves. Like the man here, we talked about in verse 29, how he says, we have to be careful, because if we were to pull those wheats up, or the tares up while they're growing, the wheats would go up together. Well, they have their roots together. If you start pulling out the tares, you start pulling out the weeds, wheats, which is what you wanted. From this section here, we need to learn that as Christians, everything we do has a consequence. We need to be careful with all of our words, how we act and do things, and how we treat each other. You can learn that from this little tiny passage. It's quite interesting. Another thing is, if you've ever studied the wheat and the tares, you're going to notice that the tares, when they're growing, they look really similar to a wheat when they're growing up. So they had no clue. The lesson we can learn from this is that the devil, like Adam and Eve, only changed one little thing. And it was completely against what God said. Now, same way with the wheat and the tares. They grew up, and at first they looked good. But eventually when it came time to harvest time, you could tell there was a huge difference. That's how the devil can work on us as well. is at first we look like we're doing the right thing. We have noble causes for what we're doing. But in the end, it was for naught. I could think of an example of that. We've talked before about the gambling and such. Oh, I'm going to win the lottery just to give money back to the church. Well, yeah, it's a good cause, but your means for doing so are of the devil. All right, let's move on to the next parable. Matthew chapter 13, 31 and 32. Now, unfortunately, this one we don't have an explanation, but we'll do our best. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in its branches. Now, honestly, I knew what a mustard seed looked like. I know what they are, but I had no idea before reading this what it became. Seed, it becomes this huge tree. When you read in this verse, it talks about it, the least of all seeds, so it's the smallest, the tiniest, but it becomes this greatest of trees. It's a very beautiful picture if you actually want to look at some sometime. But interesting thing is, because they were so tiny and they were so plentiful, even people in the first century could easily afford these. They weren't worth much to them, or they didn't have an appraisal for it, or they didn't appreciate it as much. But again, we said the kingdom of heaven is like this mustard seed, this little tiny, worthless almost thing. Christ is saying it's compared to that. It's interesting. Take a really close look. I already mentioned it, but look very closely at 32. It says this tiny seed grows into something magnificent, this huge tree. If we take a look in the Old Testament and you think about it, the Jews had all this knowledge of Christ. They knew what he was coming and what he was going to do. But besides the fact that they knew all this, they denied him. They rebuked him. In fact, they were the ones that led him to the cross. They valued him in the same manner that they valued this tiny little mustard seed, the thing that was worth pretty much nothing to them. And it was horrible. Just like the seed, you know, for a little tiny period of time, it's tiny. But eventually it becomes that big, magnificent tree. Christ's teachings were the same way. They started out small, but over time, you can't find it in a different, there is not a language you can't find it in. It's everywhere. It's amazing how it just flourished. And this will tie into another one of the parables that we talked about here in a little bit. Another thing I want to point out, something I never even noticed the first time I read this a while ago, was we're talking about the birds. Take a look at that again. Verse 32. It says, so the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Think about this for a moment. Why do birds go into trees? It's because it's safe. It's a home. There's no predators around. Isn't that how heaven is? Heaven is like this tree that grew from a little tiny mustard seed. It's protecting them. It's keeping them from harm. And the gospel does the same thing for us. It prevents us. If we follow the gospel, doing what it says, it protects us from the harms of the earth. I mean, we're still going to hurt and persecute, but we have that hope that we have a better tomorrow. In other words, you can look at it as it's saving us from that fiery hell, which is inevitable. If we go to Revelations 21:4, again, I'm going to get out of Matthew for a second. Revelation 21:4. Said, and God shall wipe away all the tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Heaven is a place that's going to protect us from this harm. Heaven is a place that there will be no more problems. There will be no pain, no suffering, no more death. just like this tree was protecting these birds, providing them safety. Let's move on to the next parable, another short one, verse 33. This is another parable he spoke unto them. The kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measure of meal till the whole was leavened. Okay, now here's where we got to keep things in context. Throughout the Bible, when we see the word leaven, it's usually referred to something as evil, bad, or horrible. These are Christ's word. Christ is saying the kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven. Christ is not saying that the kingdom of heaven is horrible. We just looked at it. It's a beautiful, wonderful place. He's not saying it's evil, it's bad. So obviously we need to keep, like I said, keep it in context and see what it's referring to. Now the thing is if you've never made bread, you never watched grandma or mom make bread, maybe you don't understand this, but when you add the yeast or the leaven, what happens to that loaf that they originally made? That leaven takes that little tiny chunk that you wrote the dough, and it expands it completely. And it looks like nothing you've ever seen before. Right? It becomes something else, and it's mustard seed. This is this very same thing. The leaven, it started out little, tiny, small, and then it expanded. And that's how we have the church everywhere. It's interesting. Did it already die? That's interesting. Not that I need it, but we'll see if that comes back on or not. Yeah, it might be. That's pretty sad if that's a brand new battery, too. Oh, well, you don't need it. What's really sad, or well, I guess not sad, what's really amazing is that we didn't have to take a trip to Jerusalem to study about Christ. We didn't have to take a trip to Jerusalem to learn Greek, to learn Hebrew. We have the word in our own language. It has spread everywhere. We can easily pick it up. We don't need this fancy education. We don't need to be the top A student in the world. We can easily understand and grasp the Bible. Very interesting. Let's continue on to the next one. Fallen parable is found in 44. Verse 44, so let's drop down there. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a treasure hid in the field, the which when a man has found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth, and sell all that he hath, and buyeth the field. It's kind of a challenging question for us sometimes is, what are we willing to do when we found heaven? When we found that hope? Are we like this man and we just decide we're going to give everything we got? Christ did that, God did that with Christ. He didn't just give his second best. He didn't give, just a guy that was blind or lame or dead. He didn't give a guy that was sinful. He gave a guy that was perfect, without blemish, the perfect sacrifice. God gave his best. And why aren't we? We, like this man, and like the following man, the one who gives a pearl, let's read that one real quick. It says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of the great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. We have two examples here of people that just, they found this one goal, this one beautiful thing, and they just had to have it, and they were going to give everything they could to do it. Think of an example here is when we think about Cain and Abel. Abel was said to have given the best of his gift, and God was well pleased with it. Now, he's not saying that Cain's gift was horrible. It just didn't please God. It wasn't the best. That's all the information we know about it. Do you think that God's going to be pleased with us if we aren't making the best sacrifices every day for him? We're not just talking about what you throw on the collection plate. We're talking your daily lives. Next parable we're going to see. Oh, actually, Okay. Yeah. Next parable we're going to see is in 47:50. And we're going to be talking about angels, and they're going to be comparing it to fishermen here. It says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into the vessels, but cast the bad away. So shall it be at the end of the world, the angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just, and shall cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. I can picture, I've seen those movies or the shows where you got the fishermen and they're hauling in these big nets of fish. There's only certain fish that they can have, or they just don't want these crabs or junk or garbage, whatever. If something's in that net that they don't want, they're not going to keep it. They're going to toss it out. And that's the same thing that happens here. The angels have their nets out. They're out there catching people. If the people that are caught in the net and are still in the net that are not acceptable to God, what are they going to do with them? They're going to cast them out. And unfortunately, they're not going back in the water. They're going into the furnace here, where there will be, again, wailing and gnashing of teeth. This is not a pretty circumstance. Quite interesting is we've talked in a brief time here, seven parables all together today. And the six that we've talked about this afternoon, go back and look at them. Each one of them says, heaven is like this. It's pretty amazing. We get an idea of heaven before we even get there. Because we can see how beautiful it is. We've talked about before how we see in Revelation how it's like jewelry, or its streets are like gold. We know that. But here, this is Jesus talking himself saying, this is like a mustard seed. This is like this. This is like that. Isn't it amazing that 2,000 years, roughly, a little less than that, the same message that Christ gave to them then applies to us today. I don't need to be a farmer to understand what this means. I don't need to be having a great education to understand what Christ is trying to reference here. It doesn't take much to look out, see that a bird knows that it can rest in the nest or rest its nest in a tree and be safe. It's easy. Anyone can figure it out. A child can figure it out. So it boils down to is, are we being like the sleeping man in the first parable that we talked about this afternoon? Or the tares, who's sleeping and unaware of what the devil's doing? We need to pay attention. We need to be ever vigilant in what we do. And always be aware. Like the parable of the mustard seed, we see that heaven is the true goal for us, and it is our net of safety. It's our refuge. Any other option, as we've seen with all these other parables, especially the one we just read, verse 50, and shall cast them into the furnace of fire, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of the teeth. I know people don't like to hear it, but you have two options, A or B. A, be the one that the net catches. That it requires us doing some things. Or B, the horrible thought of actually going to hell, which nobody wants to actually think that they're going to do. If your goal is to make it to heaven, then there's some things we need to do. Matthew 13:51, we're going to look at that real quick. Just next verse. Jesus saith unto them, have you understood all these things? And they said unto him, yes, Lord. This isn't just remembering that they were, got to remember, these people weren't the most educated people. We had fishermen, and they understood these things. They heard what he said. We know that is the beginning. If you want to study more, learn more about this, come ask somebody. If you don't feel comfortable talking to me and asking me, ask a brethren that you know about or that you are comfortable with. There's plenty of stuff you can learn from these things. And unfortunately, just barely touched anything on it. But anyways, we know, like these guys, the apostles, the disciples, that we have to hear God's word first. And then we need to be able to understand it. We need to take it into our heart. And I like to say that. I'm going to rephrase that. We need to act on it. just like they did. Romans 10:17 talks that faith comes from hearing. That is our first step. And we have started hearing it. We have started listening to it. We've actually sat down and pulling it apart as we normally have been lately. And we're trying to figure it out more, try to get a better understanding. And again, Hebrews 11:6, we talked about where we must have that faith. It is required. And it is required that we believe in God, that He is a rewarder. As I mentioned in the previous, a few moments ago, Luke 13:3 talks about if we do not repent, we will perish. If we're not part of that A group, that's what the angels are looking for, then we will be thrown into the fire. If we do not repent, we will perish. Where perish does not just mean physically, it is talking about a spiritual perishment. It is not what we want. At least I hope it's not what you want. Again, we do not want to let the devil catch us in sleeping. He could easily overtake us. That is why we need to change our lives. Not just wait till next week or next month. We need to do it now before he catches us in that snare. After that, we see that the eunuch, Acts chapter 8. It was mentioned that he was wanting to be baptized. He was reading. And he was studying. And he's like, what's stopping me from being baptized? It was quite clear that he had to confess. And we already seen this morning that if we confess Christ, he'll confess us before God. Once we've done all these things, once we've followed our faith to the point where we need to be following it properly, will lead us to Mark 16:15-16, where we will be baptized. If there's any the need to respond to the invitation, now is the time to come forward as we stand and sing.